You are listening to Absent Minded, brought to you by HabsEyesOnThePrize.com.
Hello and welcome to Absent Minded. It's a round table with all the superstars of this podcast in today. It's me, Patrick Bexell, but I'm joined by Jared Book, who's just released an article. Jared.
Hello. The Karen Ouellette one was ready since last year. I had to add Pierre Turgeon to it, but yeah, it's already out. It's one article, but it's out, and I'm ready to go. Let's do this.
We're also joined by the ever-present number one podcast host in Hong Kong, Matt Drake.
I don't know if I'm number one in Hong Kong anymore, but don't worry. Once the season gets started, I will be.
And of course, somewhere in Europe, because he's mentioned so many places in the last 5 minutes that we still don't know where he is. Anton Rosegård, the fugitive.
Exactly. Yeah, nobody knows. Not even Interpol.
Yeah, and the only picture we have of you is really from the back.
Exactly. That's how it should be.
No one knows. You might see him somewhere, wherever you are, because we don't really know where he is either. The good thing we do know is that he has some good insights to today's discussion that will center on what has been on and off on Twitter, in media. Should Montreal move up? Should they move down with either or both of their first round picks in this year's draft? Let's start with you, Matt. What do you think?
I don't know. I was pretty sold on them at least trying to move up until today when it came out that maybe Anaheim's interested in taking Matvei Michkov with the second pick. I think that might cause somebody who should not be available at number five to be available at number five. If Michkov goes number two, that could change a lot of things in the rest of the top five. And then next thing you know, Leo Carlson or Adam Fantilli could be sitting there for you at five, which is nuts. Neither of those players should be available at fifth overall. If that's the case, I don't see the harm in just staying at five, waiting to see what happens, and then picking one of them up. I also think Matvei Michkov is a great pick. So I think they're fine at five. I would almost rather them stay there than sit there and try to expend a bunch of assets just to move up a couple of spots and take somebody who at the end of the day might end up being available for you there anyways. Because you're not trading up to second overall because you magically think Connor Bedard's going to be sitting there. It's because you're either interested in Adam Fantilli or you're interested in Leo Carlson. Now we have information out there that says maybe, just maybe, one of those guys is going to be hanging around at five anyways. So I don't know. But I think I'm less sold today than I was yesterday on them trying to move up.
As you mentioned, there will be a package. It will be a huge deal in order to move up to those spots. So would it be worth
it? It depends, man. If there was a possibility that Connor Bedard was going to slide to number two, I'd say, yeah, get to number two and then pray that, you know, Chicago makes the dumb decision to leave Connor Bedard on the board. I don't see a situation where, because the only two teams that they were linked to so far were what? It was particularly Anaheim. And there was also the possibility of trading up with Columbus. I don't see either of those two teams letting you move up for anything less than a King's ransom. So they're going to want that Florida pick down at the bottom of the first round. They might want an additional second round pick, or they're going to want a prospect or two. And I feel like Anaheim in particular, they're probably going to be sitting there and demanding Cole Caulfield, which I don't think is going to happen. I don't think the Montreal Canadiens are in the slightest bit interest in moving Cole Caulfield just so they can jump up three spots in the draft. And I think that's going to become the problem. Anaheim's going to see an opportunity there where they're going to go, we want to reunite Trevor Zegras and Cole Caulfield. And Montreal's going to be like, yeah, that's not happening. We'll take Trevor Zegras if you want. And then they're going to be like, no, we're not trading Trevor Zegras. And it's going to go in this big carousel to the point where, you know, the asking price is just not going to be something that Montreal is willing to pay and not something that I think the fans are going to want them to be willing to pay. So I don't see it happening. But we were talking about this earlier in the EOTP chat, me and Jared. There's a possibility that moving up to number four ends up costing you a little bit less if things start to get weird. Like if Anaheim goes out there and we pick number two, they take Michkov, right? All of a sudden, a team like Columbus might say, well, I can trade back a couple of spots and still get what I was looking for. So the cost to move up might actually end up coming down a little bit. And that could be an interesting aspect. So I'd say for the moment, I'd say wait until the draft gets started. Look, forget about the Anaheim pick and maybe focus on the other two that are ahead of you. And if something crazy happens on day one, then maybe you try to pull the trigger and maybe they get a little bit jumpy and they accept something a little bit lower than they would today.
Jared, you are almost as old as me. So we remember Canucks moving up to get the Sedins or getting one of the Sedins to get the third overall pick, what would it be the same kind of deal that Montreal has to facilitate in order to move up those spots?
It'd be harder. Because the thing about that 99 draft, was that it was a really weak draft, right? The Canucks actually traded up for number one and then traded number one to get 2 and 3 on the condition that Atlanta didn't pick the Sedins, right? And they ended up with Patrick Stefan. So I think that there's two coins to this, right? And Matt touched on a few of them. What I see here is that the reason why there's so much uncertainty with Montreal at number five is whether Michkov is the one. Are they going to take Michkov? Because if they don't, and the top four goes the way that we expect, then there becomes a drop-off, right? And, you know, depending how you feel about Zach Benson, he's probably closer to that group than anybody. But then you have like the Ryan Leonards, the David Reinbackers, you know, all those guys. Dalibor Dvorsky. So what you have to look at is you have to look at what is going to happen here. And if Michkov isn't available for the Canadiens to take, if he's taken by Anaheim at 2 or anywhere else, the Canadiens clearly, and Matt touched on this, you don't trade up to number 2 to take Will Smith, right? You don't trade up to number 2 to pass on Carlson or Fantilli. So if either one of Smith, Carlson, or Fantilli are there at 5 or around, I think that it limits the need to move up for the Canadiens, right? Because I the reason why Montreal would want to trade up to number 2 is there's two options. Either they really know they're not going to take Michkov at 5, and don't want to be left with him as the only option in that top five. And the other option is that they really like one of the other guys and want to make sure they get that specific guy. So I think there's a chance, but the price is going to be very high. And the incentive for a team like Anaheim or Columbus to trade down, it depends on what they're looking for, right? Like if Columbus or any team in the top five, even San Jose to a certain extent, if they feel like they can go to 5 and are fine with whoever they get, then yeah, they might be able to get another asset from Montreal and still get the guy they want. The intrigue surrounding Montreal is that the expectation is that at 5, the only one of those top 5 guys left is Michkov, and whether they're going to take him or not. So yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting, and for the second straight year, it kind of feels like Montreal is like the cork in the bottle of this draft. You saw it last year with Slafkovský over Wright, and then things kind of went kind of crazy. No one expected Wright to fall to number 4, and this year they're sitting at number 5, and everyone's kind of like, okay, what's going to happen with them, and even above them, what other teams decide to do can really make a difference on what the incentive for Montreal is.
Anton, what's your take on this now that you heard both Jared and Matt, obviously, but you obviously have thoughts of your own?
Yeah, exactly. It's difficult to know exactly how you should approach this draft exactly, because as you've both spoken about, there are four highly talented players who are one cut above the rest of them, and with Matvei Michkov being the only one who has a little bit of question marks around him. And if it was up to me, I would probably stay at number 5, because when it comes to everything, as we've spoken about now, the price will be probably enormous to move to number 2 and get an Adam Fantilli, for example. And it's still, you know, a couple of years back, we saw everyone being very high on Quentin Byfield, for example, at number 2, and or a Kaapo Kakko at number 2, or a Patrick Laine at number 2. And it's difficult to know exactly how an 18-year-old will actually turn out. There's a reason why David Pasternak didn't go until number, 26 in the draft. It's so much a guessing game still when these prospects are just 17, 18 years old. And if you have to pay a king's ransom to go up to number, you know, as Matt said in the beginning here, if it was for Connor Bedard, you know, that franchise all-ring player, a Connor McDavid, a Wayne Gretzky, a Mario Lemieux type player, then absolutely pay a king's ransom. But Montreal are, they are working on something good here. We saw just what Sean Monahan said about Martin Saint-Louis today, about his importance as a coach, and that he's never had a coach like this before. And they have such a young and aspiring group of players right now that I feel like if you actually end up trading away a few of them, or you trade away assets that you already have in your system, you might end up regretting it in the future.
Problem is also, from Montreal's point of view, is that this rebuild or retool has gone on for quite some time, whereas other teams hasn't and could probably afford to take Michkov at 2, 3, 4, meaning in a way that you get 2 or 3 more years where you're going to pick early in the draft and get other big talented players. Michkov is an amazing talent. There are other things surrounding him in this climate, and not speaking to teams, and just the discussion with the KHL, NHL agreement, et cetera, or the lack of agreement, really. So there is that. Does that make it more interesting as well? Is that another layer? Is it a 3D chess board, more or less?
I think it's definitely an issue. Right. I think that there's, and I spoke about this a little bit with Scott Wheeler in the podcast we did with him. It's like you can trust Scott to play Michkov when he deserves to be played, but there's no guarantee in terms of what his role will be, or whether he gets loaned again. I don't think that's going to happen necessarily, but when you look at guys like Will Smith or Ryan Leonard who are going to the NCAA, players who are in Europe like David Reinbacher, you at least know that on their teams, they'll play big roles and they'll have some stability. Whereas, not only are you sure he's not coming over, which is fine, whatever, most players don't make a big difference in the first 3 years after a draft anyway, unless, you're Connor Bedard or something. But at the same time, It's do you want to, the number 5 pick is so important to an organization, or top 5 pick. Sorry, I'm not just leaving this to Montreal. And you have to look at it. I mean, Pat Verbeek is a new GM, so he probably has the time to wait. Mike Greer probably does. Does Jarmo Kekalainen? I don't know. At the same time, though, if he picks Michkov, he can be like, hey, don't judge me on this team. We're still rebuilding and our top pick is still, 3 years away. I have to keep my job that long at least. So, I mean, it's kind of an interesting scenario because, the average tenure for an NHL GM is like 5.5 years. Can you afford to wait half of it for your top 5 pick? I don't know how many GMs can do that when your job's on the line. So, yeah, it's definitely a factor. I don't think that it's that much of a factor in terms of waiting. I think it's more, what happens if next year he signs another 3-year extension? Then what? And I think that's an issue.
We do know the general managers can live in their job for about a decade on the coattails of a pick that they didn't make. Everybody knows who I'm talking about right now. So you got a point there. If he goes for the elite talent and he's got to wait, that's kind of tough for him in his specific situation to explain. If he doesn't have the teams that allow him to keep his job moving forward, that he might never live to see. Well, live. I'm using that a little bit loosely there, but
he might not be around.
Yeah, he might not be around to see Matvei Michkov actually come over and find out what he can do. I think for the Habs, I think their concern, you hit the nail on the head. They're not worried about the years that it takes for him to come over. Nobody's expecting the Habs to compete for the Cup next year, and not the year after, and probably not even the year after that. So several years of not having Matvei Michkov is not the problem. I do think the Habs, because of the way that they are, I think the lack of control, the lack of visibility, the lack of ability to be involved in any kind of decision-making when it comes to him, I think that's going to be the thing that scares them more than anything. I really don't think they're worried about whether or not he'll come over or how long it's going to take. I think it's that aspect. I think it's not being able to say, well, we'd like him to do X, Y, or Z. We've seen a number of their prospects working with the development team throughout the course of the last few years. We've seen them take steps in areas specifically they need to take steps in, like Joshua Roy and Sherbrooke. He's developed into a defensive specialist. He's developed a penalty kill game that's going to be extremely valuable for him at the next level. They're not going to be able to have any influence on those things with Matvei Michkov. So I think that'll be their number one concern. And maybe, as Jared mentioned, the reason why they wanted to move up to avoid that temptation, to put themselves in a position for a Leo Carlson or an Adam Fantilli specifically, or maybe even Will Smith, you could throw him in there as well, so that they can have more say in what goes on and that they can kind of mold that player into what they see as being their need once they're ready to actually compete, right? Some of these guys are going to take the same amount of time as Matvei Michkov anyways to actually be available to them. If that's the case, you probably look at the Habs as an organization that want to have more of a hand in how that development goes during those years.
Anton, would it make sense to move down? Let's say Michkov is there at 5. Would it make sense to trade down a couple of places in order to maybe get that not sexy pick that everyone is talking about, David Dwanbacher?
No, but I'm just saying, like, it all depends on the offer you get. Like, if it's, I remember listening to the 2019 draft, for example, when you had the camera and the microphone at the draft table, and Montreal got an offer from what I'm guessing was Vegas, just a couple of spots down, who wanted to trade up to 15 and probably get Cole Caulfield. Mark Bergevin looked over at Trevor Timmins and asked, should we make the trade? It's an extra third. And Timmins said, no, we're picking. So, and that was obviously, like, in hindsight, getting Cole Caulfield instead of Peyton Krebs was the right call. I don't see what Montreal would do with yet another draft pick further down in the draft, because I don't see what, like, if it's a Matvei Michkov who is still there at 5 and someone really, really wants him and is willing to trade, you know, a quite a good prospect, for example, and their first round pick for Montreal to move down. Yeah, then maybe. But, you know, to just get an extra third or something, I don't know if Montreal would be interested in that. Well, what would they do with yet another pick? If they really like Reinbacher the best out of the rest, so to say, you pick him at 5 and you don't look back. That's the thing. Like, nobody expected Moritz Seider to go at 6. He went at 6. He was even surprised himself. And then he developed into a monster. So, well, we, as I said before, we don't know what these guys are going to be 3 years down the line. We were all quite kind of not very high on the Caden Gooley pick, for example, when he was picked at 16, because it was said as it was seen as a boring kind of, you know, mass selection. But he looks great. So, as I said, like, you know, if you don't get an astronomical amount for, you know, to move down, then you pick what you see as the best player at 5.
I think if you're not taking Michkov at 5. And he's the one that's there at 5. Obviously, this will have to wait until, you know, the fourth pick is done. But I think, yeah, I think there's an argument for trading down a few spots. You know, there is an argument for trading 5 and 31 to Detroit for, say, 9 and 17, as an example, right? I think that there's a lot of different players available at 5 if you don't go in Michkov's direction. And if you don't really love one in particular, you might as well trade down and get one from get a player you like, whether it's, you know, Zach Benson, who falls, you know, farther down the top 10, Ryan Leonard, Reinbacher, or whether it's someone in that next tier that you you're looking at that you want to get a better look at as well. So yeah, I think that there is an argument for it. You might not even have to go down that far. I mean, you know, you can look at Washington at 8 or Philadelphia at 7 as teams that might want to move up. Even Arizona at 6, I mean, they're probably going to stay there. But if they want to avoid a team, you know, jumping over them to take the guy that they want, they can trade up as well. So I think that there's a lot of different conversations and options for Montreal, depending on who they want. And a lot of it is going to circle around Matvei Michkov and whether they want him or not. But there's a lot of really good players in this top 10, and not all of them will be taken in the top 10. And I think that there's an interesting little game that can be played where you trade down and get your guy and get extra assets. And, you know, trading a top 5 pick is still going to net you quite a bit, right? Even if you drop down to 8, that might even get you a second or a future first, depending on the situation. So it'll be very interesting because, you know, it's not like you're trading a, you know, 15th or into the top 10. So, yeah, I mean, this draft is good, has the potential to be very, very chaotic, or it can go very, very straightforward and not very many surprises. So it's going to be very interesting to watch as we get into it. And I can't wait because I'm almost more excited for this draft than I was when Montreal had the first overall pick last year. Because there's a lot more options, and you know that Kent Hughes is not afraid to make moves, right? Nobody saw Kirby Dach coming last year, and this year you kind of expect it, right? You expect the Montreal Canadiens to do something during the draft.
The God of Mischief is back and better than ever.
Loki.
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 Wow. Great to see you again.
Critics agree Loki season 2 is
marvelous.
Great. And it's finally here.
How much do you know?
Let's assume I don't know much.
A mind-bending adventure. Spectacularly cinematic.
I've been waiting for a moment like this.
It surpasses all expectations.
A little over the top, don't you think?
I thought it was spot on.
Loki season 2, now streaming only on Disney+.
Moving up from 31, though, is that a possibility?
I would try to move up from 31 if possible. But, you know, it really depends on the price. I'm against moving down. I've got my list of players that I'd really like to get at number 5. And I would keep that pick, honestly, depending on what the offer is. Again, it's always depending on what the offer is. As for 31, I think it's a lot easier to move up from 31 than it is to move up from 5. So I think the cost will be a lot lower. And I think that's where we might see them make a move if somebody falls that they've had their eye on. So if somebody was projected in the top, say 12, and we get to pick, you know, 12, and that person's still on the board, I could see them jumping up to 13, paying a little bit to get up there from 31, maybe including the 37th pick there as well, depending on who it is. I think that's a lot easier for them to do than moving up from 5 at the very least. That being said, there's significant smoke out there that they're very interested in Ethan Gauthier, who is a teammate of Joshua Roy. He's going to be probably right there for them at 31. He's a very safe, high floor pick that they could take, and they could have very good confidence that he's going to be a contributor at the NHL level, albeit not a top line player. He's not projected to be a top line player anyways. They've got options at 31 is what I'm trying to say, where they're going to have at least a reasonable degree of certainty that that player is going to be able to make it to the NHL and to contribute for them. Again, that being said, this draft outside of the top 5, especially if things are already looking like they might get wild in the top 5, there's a very distinct possibility that somebody is going to drop and then Kent Hughes is going to pull one of those moves, right? He's going to package that 31st pick with some other prospects or other picks and try to get back up into that top 20 and see what we can get. It should be interesting. Again, I think it's way more likely that they move up from 31 than it is they move down from 5.
One of the players that has risen over the last couple of weeks in the draft rankings is a certain Mr. Tennis from Rögle, Vilander. You're so young, so you don't remember Mats Wilander, though. So you don't get the reference.
No, that was before my time, yeah.
For having played with Adam Engström, signed with Boston University, going to play with Lane Hutson, would that be an interesting target?
Do you mean if you trade up from 31? Yeah, absolutely. I'm trying to find a quote. I think that it was Hadi who sent it to me. And said that, you know, Tom Wilander is someone who is severely underrated and should really get more credit. I really hope it was Hadi who said it, because otherwise I'm crediting the wrong person here. But yeah, Tom Wilander is, it would be fun for, I was going to say, it would be fun for you, but obviously he's already signed with the NCAA and Boston University now. So you won't get that, you know, that fun thing of having a Swede to report about. But yeah, he looks He looks the part for real. It would be fun to see what he can bring to an already stacked Montreal defensive prospect line.
Indeed, and also playing with Lane Hudson would make for an interesting. I would assume half the Montreal media would be in Boston every other week.
Probably,
yeah.
I mean, you know, half the Canadiens management will be in Boston anyway, right? Because Kent Hughes' son, although I think Kent Hughes' son actually is transferring from Northeastern, if I'm not mistaken. I think he entered the portal, but yeah, I mean, look, the you know, between Jeff Gorton, Kent Hughes, Martin St. Louis, I don't think any GM and coach combination has spent more time watching university hockey in Boston than that group of guys. But in all honesty, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. If the thing is that if the Canadians like Leonard and they like Reinbacher, which all indications are they do, there's a lot of players who are similar to them late in the draft. So if you go in one direction at 5, at 31 or at 37, you have those right-handed defensemen like Willander, and then there's, you know, Oliver Bonk, and there's Lukas Dragicevic. All those guys are going to be in that range around there. And then, you know, you look at the forwards, and if you don't want necessarily, you know, Zach Benson at 5, then you have guys like Bradley Nadeau and Gavin Brindley, who are a little on the small side, Andrew Kristall, who might be there at 31 and 37. So, you know, the Canadians are a team that obviously is not afraid to take smaller players. Lane Hudson's a good example. Philip Machar is a good example. And that's just under this current administration. And but there's like a time and a place for that, right? They weren't taking, you know, Lane Hudson at 28 or even at 30, 33. They took him at 62, right? So the Canadians are a team that looks for value, and there's the potential for a lot of really good value at 31 and at 37. Having said that, though, I would be very surprised if they make both of those picks. I think that there's NHL players that they're looking at that they might trade for. I think that there's the opportunity to trade up, like we've mentioned. I would be very surprised if they're picking at 31 and at 37. I don't think they'll necessarily trade both of those picks unless they trade up. But yeah, it'll be very interesting to see. And the fun, like I said, this is a fun draft for the Canadians, because I feel like there's a lot of different options they can go in. And we know, you know, we kind of became accustomed to nothing really happening at the draft under Marc Bergevin, and even before him, the Canadians weren't really a team that did a lot. You know, they traded like a first for Alex Tanguay and a first for Trevor Linden, and that was pretty much all they did. And when I was growing up, and so now that, you know, they have the options to play around with their picks. They have a lot of picks, and they're not afraid to make big moves.
Hey, we saw that with two seconds for Andrew Shaw. Don't forget.
Yeah, that's true too. Those 2 seconds might get you Alex DeBrincat now, though. If you know, they can trade 31 and 37 to Ottawa, but no. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
Matt, would you trade the 31st and a prospect for PLD?
I would not, because I don't believe these rumors that are out there. I don't believe that the Los Angeles Kings are interested in paying a King's ransom to get Pierre-Luc Dubois. I don't believe that anybody's paying a King's ransom. He's made his intentions, his desire at the very least, to go to Montreal pretty clear, pretty public. His agent has talked about it. I mean, this is something that's been known for a while. It's not a secret. You don't need to be an insider to know it. So I would be sticking with Winnipeg hard on, you want to get rid of Pierre-Luc Dubois. We're talking about roster players. We're talking about Christian Dvorak, plus, of course. It's not just going to be Christian Dvorak, but I'd be playing hardball with them. I would say, listen, I'm not giving up that much for a guy who's known to want to come here, because if you can't get a deal done, he's not signing with you. The best you're going to get is one more year. He hits UFA and you lose him for nothing. So you might as well take what you can get and then get out of my office. I'm not making a significant trade for him. Now, that being said, if it was only the 31st overall pick and only a prospect, I would consider it, depending on which prospect that is. It ain't going to be Lane Hudson. I can tell you that right now, that would be a massive problem among the fan base in Montreal, and it would be a stupid idea for the Habs to agree to trade Leon Hudson away. I also would refuse if they asked for Joshua Roy.
Yeah, but that's on principle.
Outside of that, I'd probably be interested in it. If they were willing to take, you know, Riley Kidney in number 31, I think you got to take that and you got to laugh all the way to the bank, because I think that's a pretty fair deal. Outside of that, you know, I'm not doing it. I'm straight up not doing it, because I think that he's going to come to Montreal. He's going to make his way here one way or another. And I don't believe this smoke about LA. I do not see LA giving up a King's ransom.
Is Mark Bergevin there
to get Pierre-Luc Dubois?
He never gave up a King's ransom before.
He is. He's an advisor.
For the time being, he's an advisor. But he's like, Pierre-Luc Dubois, is he really going to throw a bunch of assets to try and stick it to Montreal? If that's the case, then go ahead. Eat your heart out. Have fun. You want to do that? Go ahead. The Habs center depth, like, if we talk about Pierre-Luc Dubois, we have to kind of go to the root of it. It's like, why do we want him? Well, because he's good. He definitely makes the Montreal Canadiens better right now on that roster. But do they need to throw a bunch of assets to get him on the team? I would argue no. You have centers coming up in the ranks. Right now, your center depth as of today, right, if they do no moves, they're looking at Nick Suzuki, Kirby Dach, Sean Monahan, and probably Jake Evans as the four. Right now, you've already got Christian Dvorak sitting there twiddling his thumbs like, what am I going to do this year? So you're not in a desperation point for a center, and you're also competing next year, and that's key.
No, I was just going to say, like, Christian Dvorak will obviously play when Sean Monahan is injured for 60 games. So,
well, that's a fair point, but I'm operating under the assumption that everybody starts the year healthy. That's your center depth right now. And I think you're in a pretty good position considering that you're not expected to compete. Does anybody realistically think that adding Pierre-Luc Dubois and losing one pick, maybe two picks and multiple prospects is magically going to make them a cup contender next year?
But I think it makes them a cup contender in 2 or 3 years. I think it makes them closer than, But I think
in 2 or 3 years.
I think that one way or another, the whole saga is going to end this offseason. Because if he gets traded, whether it's to Montreal or elsewhere, there's an extension that's going to be with that. So he's not going to be a UFA. So I don't think that the argument of just wait until next July and get him for nothing is going to happen. Because I think that no matter what happens, the Jets, and that's why he gave a list of what 5-6 teams or whatever it was, has been given to the Jets. He doesn't want to completely screw them over. Despite, you know, asking for a trade and saying he's not going to sign a 1-year deal with them. But having said that, I think the chances of a trade Montreal are average. I wouldn't say like there's a really good chance. But I think that, yeah, you have to consider doing it, because just flexibility in the lineup, like Jake Evans can play wing. We saw that during the playoff run when he played with Philip Deneau and Arturi Lehkonen. Oh, no, it was Brendan Gallagher, wasn't it? And then Lehkonen replaced him after Evans got hit by Scheifele. But I think that, Jake Evans could play wing. Pierre-Luc Dubois has said that, you know, he doesn't mind, you know, playing wing long-term. You know, even a guy like Kirby Dach. Right, he played wing, most of last year, or at least part of last year before the injuries hit, pretty much every center in the organization. So I mean, it's did the Canadians need him? No. If this was a year ago, before they got Kirby Dach, the desperation would be much higher. I don't think the Canadians are desperate, but I think that it does make sense to explore the options. Having said that, like Matt said, there's a cap to that cost. You're not trading Suzuki or Caulfield. You're not trading Dach. You're probably not trading Owen Beck. I would think he's probably part of that untouchable. Not trading Leon Hudson, not trading Joshua Roy. And I think that, you know, would they trade? You're not trading Yuri Slavkovsky either. Let's just get him out of the way. Would you trade Philip Machar? Yeah. As part of that deal, then it starts to get into a kind of interesting little debate, right? Because you have to talk about what other picks are we giving, You know, so yeah, I think that it's an interesting debate to be had. I think that the Canadians are definitely in there. I don't know. It depends what the Jets are going to do, right? If they're rebuilding, then the Canadians are a better fit than if they're not rebuilding. Because the only NHL players that can conceivably be traded that Montreal would want to part with are probably Josh Anderson and Christian Dvorak. And that's not really going to do it for a guy like Pierre-Luc Dubois. So I agree with all the articles out there to say that there's not really a fit, but I don't think you can discount Montreal. But personally, I just hope that when Pierre-Luc Dubois is traded, it comes with an extension so that we can just either have him as a member of the Canadiens or just forget about it and move on and discuss other things.
Well, but there's you bring up an interesting point, and there's a caveat to what I said about not wanting to make the trade for him, right? What's that extension look like? Because if the trade is coming with an extension, I'll tell you right now, I'm not paying him $9 million to come to Montreal. I'm just not. Nick Suzuki in the last two seasons has put up 127 points in 164 games. That's 0.77 points per game. He's getting paid $7.875 million. Pierre-Luc Dubois apparently wants $9 million. So no, you could have a little bit more than Suzuki, maybe not $9 million. Because he's put up 123 points in 154 games over the last two seasons at 0.79. You don't get like $2 million extra for 0.02 additional points per game. You just don't. I don't. And there's nothing against him. I like him. I want him on the Habs. I think it's great. I think you get a hometown hero. I think he's marketable. But I think if he wants that trade to happen where it's coming to Montreal, that deal needs to be a little bit sexier on Montreal's end. Why? Because you're going to come here and you're immediately going to get endorsement deals that nobody else gets in the league. You're going to be in a McDonald's commercial tomorrow. You might be in a Burger King commercial too. You'll be on competing commercials and you'll be getting paid by both of them. You're going to have every endorsement deal available to somebody because you can speak French and because you're from the area. You're marketable as hell in this area. So you there's got to be some give and take there. Listen, we got our two top players right now signed for around the same amount of money. You're going to have to come down a little bit from that $9 million if you want that trade to be to us. If it's a sign and trade, like you said, Jared, listen, my interest in the deal gets significantly higher if his number on that extension is somewhere around Suzuki's for the contract. If it's $9 million, I know it's going to look better as the cap continues to go up, but I don't want
to. The only thing I'll say about that is that
we've set an internal cap.
Asking for $9 million is one thing. Getting it is another. So I mean, you know, it's like all the Jet fans who are like Lane Hudson and everyone else on your team, and number five overall. It's not going to happen.
Right.
But I think that definitely there, it's part of the conversation. But he does get that eighth year in a sign of trade as well. So I think that probably brings the number down as well. With it, but yeah, it'll be interesting. Like I said, this off season for the Canadians is going to be very, very intense because they're going into the off season with like no forward spots. like right now, like they have like 15 forwards on NHL contracts. And that doesn't even count any prospects or anybody coming up from Laval. So something's got to give. Something's got to give for sure.
You've been listening to Habs Unblinded. It's been a pleasure. Next time, and I'm telling all the others here as well, we're going to do a mock draft to see who will pick on number five if we do trades, if we move up from number 31 ourselves. Thank you all for listening. Please subscribe. Please stay away and don't let the police know where Anton is at this point of time.